So we're continuing. The question was asked if Haman was actually Mordechai's servant. Doesn't that make him half Jewish? So the way it works is that when a Jew purchases a servant, that servant is given half a year to a year to decide whether he wants to convert or not. And if he chooses to convert, then during that period, well, give him a circumcision and dunk him in a mikveh where he accepts mitzvot. It's a partial giur process. It's like a partial conversion process, and he accepts mitzvot like a servant. We even have a blessing on the circumcision, lamulet avadim, special blessing on it. Now, once he's undergone that process, then he is obligated in mitzvot like a servant. If he never underwent that process, so then he's not yet obligated. The servant has that year to decide, and if he says, I don't want to, so then we'll sell him. We'll sell him to a non-Jew. It's in his interest to do it, because he should get better treatment by us, but it's not obligatory. Haman never underwent that process. For whatever reason, Mordechai never followed through with taking him under his auspices. I don't know why. I don't know the source as to why.
Such a person as a pseudo-slave or whatever.
Right.
Past the point until
right.
He decides no. Then
right. But that's not Haman's business. Monetarily, legally, Haman was still in Mordechai's possession. The fact that Mordechai had a religious issue was Mordechai's problem. By Persian law, technically, Haman was Mordechai's servant. Could be that Haman attained such political clout that Mordechai realized he can't get it. He can't get it. It's not going to work. Haman's going to win politically. You see that even Ahasuerus was scared of Haman politically. So it could be that at that war, Haman was very successful and it was over. Mordechai could. If he had done it, so once he's released, then he becomes obligated in all mitzvot. Yeah. Right. Okay, so it's Esther's turn. She's not too interested.
Wait, so is his stance on being Jewish start from the circumcision after a year?
Okay. During the year. So Esther doesn't want anything, and Haggai says, you got to take this and you got to take that, and she doesn't want any of it, but she can't really refuse whatever Haggai insists. And wherever she goes, no one knows what nationality she is. So every person saw in her his own nationality. Now, Esther was green. What does green mean? What does the word yarok, yarakrok it mean? So we think of green. We think of
broccoli.
We think of broccoli, right? I meant Nahum's jacket. I didn't mean his money. So the word yarok in Hebrew is not what it is in English or in modern Hebrew. The word yarok comes from the word rek. It means empty of red. Meaning when anything that doesn't have redness to it can be called yarok. Yellow could be called yarok. Gold could be called yarok. Silver and green and blue. The word yarok comes to... The word yarok means lacking redness, right? Roy G. Biv. So, yarok. What does it mean Esther was green? It means she lacked redness. She was pale as alabaster. Esther was white. That's yarok. Yarok means she lost all redness in her face. And she's scared as anything. She's taken to Ahasuerus. And it's the month of Teves. That's a month that it's ordinarily cold. And that's when people are more into cuddling. And that was in Esther's favor. So Ahasuerus would be interested in being with her that night. So Ahasuerus spends the night with her and says, get that idol of Vashti off my bed. Every morning he'd wake up, look up at Vashti, look at the woman lying next to him and say, no good, no good. And push them all off. But when he had Esther, suddenly he said, get me a picture of her up there. So he was taken by Esther, and our sages ask, wait a second, how did Esther do that? How did she allow herself to spend the night with him? Shouldn't you rather give up your life than commit adultery? And here our sages give us a very important insight. They tell us that even in the mitzvot of Yareg Val Yavor, the prohibition is to be active. If a person isn't doing anything, if a person is passive, so then there is not that commandment that you have to rather die than transgress. So the Talmud even says, if they're about to push a person down, and they're going to push him out a window, and he's going to land on a baby. So ordinarily we say, you'd rather get killed than kill someone else. But what happens if you're not doing the killing? They're going to use your body. They're going to throw you onto the baby. So then you don't have to give up your life for it. And Esther over here was passive until this point. Until this point, we're going to see that's going to change later on. But because this is an important concept, because throughout our history, Jewish women were taken forcibly. We have responsa which discussed that there's hardly a girl in their towns that wasn't raped by the Cossacks or the Crusaders. So if they'd all have to give up their lives, you'd have very little Jewish women left. So this concept that the Talmud tells us, unfortunately, was applied many times in Jewish history. So Esther didn't do anything until now. And the king makes a huge party and he lets everyone know Esther's his queen. Now, he doesn't only make a huge party. He says, Esther, tell me what nation you're from. And Esther is silent. And she says to him, what nation are you from? what family are you from? She says, what family are you from? And that's something he doesn't want to get into. So he says, Esther, I'd really like to know. I'm going to make a huge party. If I only knew who your family was, I'd invite them. I'd give them front row seats. Doesn't work. He starts doing a special tax reduction called the Esther tax reduction. He tells her, if I'd know who your family was, I could give them a special break in taxes. Nothing doing. He starts sending out gifts to different nobles in the name of Esther. He says, this is in honor of Esther Day. I married Esther. And if I only knew who your family was, I could send them more gifts. Nothing doing. So, I guess she didn't look a day over. Whatever. So, he turns to his advisor. He says to the Jew, tell me, what do I do? How do I get her to break? Who's the Jew? Mordechai. Says to Mordechai, tell me, what do I do? How do you get a woman to be interested? She doesn't seem to care about the gifts, the tax breaks. Mordechai tells them, "Eni sham mitkana ela biyerech chaverta." He tells them a rule which is true. He tells them the one thing a woman is most jealous of is another woman. Make believe you're doing another pageant. Tell her, okay, you're not going to tell me, that's fine, but then I'm going to start looking for a wife who will tell me. And it works. Esther feels pressured. Even though she didn't want to marry Ahasuerus, but now suddenly she's being told, okay, we'll look for someone else, And Esther's about to cave in, and that's why the very next pasuk says, Mordechai kept signaling her, don't give in, don't give away your nationality. So at the same time that Mordechai is giving Ahasuerus counsel, and Mordechai is present in the conversations where Ahasuerus takes Mordechai's advice and tries to pressure Esther, behind Ahasuerus's back, Mordechai is signaling Esther, don't.
And give up such good advice?
I guess his job was to give good advice, and from here we learn something. That when your wife asks you, who do you love more, your mother or me, you got to say you. There's nothing that hurts her more than the idea that there's someone else that's important in your life. And that's another woman or a million other things. But it begins with another woman. That's why if a guy comes home and starts complimenting the secretary or his sister-in-law, he's treading on thin ice. And you'll tell yourself, but I wasn't comparing her. That's true, but in her mind you were comparing her. You came home and said that your wife's sister is so nice. And your wife gets all pressured. And you'll say, why? Why does everything have to revolve around her? And the answer is this medrash. Eni sham mitkana ela biyerech chaverta. The thing that makes a woman most jealous is another woman. So, Bigson and Seresh, they say, this is really weird. What did he take this girl for? We had relatives in the pageant. And he didn't take our relatives, and they were more beautiful than her. And ever since he took her as a wife, he's with her every night, and he's thirsty like never before. And so we never get a break. He keeps getting more wine and more drinks, and we never get to rest. This is crazy. We have to poison his drink. We have to bump him off and bump her off. They want to kill Mordechai and Esther and Ahasuerus. You guys learned the Medrash about this? How Mordechai knew about this? No. Okay, so the Medrash you have to know is that Mordechai spoke all 70 languages. He didn't necessarily speak them, but he understood them because he was on the high court. So they stood right next to Mordechai planning their execution, their assassination. And they figured Mordechai won't speak their language. They come from a faraway country called Tarsi. And they didn't realize that Mordechai did. So Mordechai understood, and he told Esther, and Esther told the king in Mordechai's name. And when the king sent his detectives, they suddenly discovered that Bigson was covering for Seresh. He took a double load of his guard duty to ensure that Seresh would be free to attain the poison and poison the drink. And they came and they summoned Bigson and Seresh, and they said, "Here, have a drink." And they said, "Why? What's the problem? Your Majesty, we brought you the drink." And Ahasuerus says, "I know, but I want you to drink from it." And they refused. And then Ahasuerus insisted, and they continued to refuse. And then they fed it to a dog, and the dog dropped dead. And they realized that the king would have died had he drank that wine, and the two were hung. And this was recorded that Esther said this over to the king in the name of Mordechai. Now, had Esther said this to the king without saying Mordechai's name, our whole story would have ended differently, right? So here we learn the importance of saying something in someone's name. We learn another interesting concept that really deserves a series in its own right. We learn about being patriotic. Because Mordechai could have said, "This Ahasuerus is a bum. Look at him, he stopped the building of the temple. Let him die. What do I have to save his life for? He's only been trouble for the Jews."
But how did he stop the building of the temple?
He ordered them to stop.
What
is that? Ahasuerus sent word to Israel and said, "Stop building the temple." Ahasuerus, when he became king, gave a decree, no building of the temple.
Was that due to the instigation of the Samaritans?
Yes. Or the instigation of Shimshi, Haman's son, or Haman himself. Yeah. Yes?
Esther would have also been poisoned. So is that related to say that he would have saved the king's life?
He could have told Esther, "Don't drink from the wine tonight." He didn't have to tell her, tell the king, "No, tonight I want water. I'm not thirsty tonight." Okay.
Maybe it would have looked suspicious then.
Maybe. But Chazal learned this way. Chazal learned like this. Okay. So now we're going to run into Haman. But first, the Megillah describes it. Achar ha-dvarim ha'ele. After all this, Haman. What does that mean, after all this? And the truth is, who needed this whole first part of the story? Why didn't the Megillah just start? The king married a Jewish girl, and then he appointed Haman, and then we'll continue the story, or continue with the story of Bigson and Seresh. So the Megillah is painting a picture. It's telling us, look, you see all this politics? It's going to be 7 years of politics now. 7 years until Esther's appointed. And all of this, the whole story of Vashti and Mordechai and Bigson and Seresh is all preparation. God is going to give us a problem called Haman, but he already prepared the antidote. It's already written in the history books. Everything's been prepared, which is the whole concept of the Megillah. Hashem is running the show behind the scenes. We're out in exile. We got to remember that he's behind the show. Mitzitz mi ben acharakim. God is watching through the cracks. And that's where we're up to right now.